Well, thank you, Sabrina, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the results call for the second quarter of 2017-18. Today is our first touch point with you after releasing our revised guidance on April 20th, which, of course, was a negative and disappointing event. We'll explain in detail the reason, the meaning of this adjustment, which is caused by a few entities, but, as you know, with significant impact. We'll also illustrate what consequences we've taken and which measures have been initiated thereafter in order to improve our performance in those selected areas going forward. Before we do that, let's also have a look on the overall performance of the group. And here we have continued this fiscal year with some solid growth momentum in large parts of our portfolio. Firstly, our reported sales at constant currency grew by 2%, despite some headwinds from poor weather conditions, but certainly supported by the earlier Easter this year. Like-for-like sales grew by 2% as well. The strong development of both the delivery business at Metro Wholesale and the online business at Real were meaningful drivers for this development. The reported EBITDA margin, including real estate, decreased by 100 basis points, primarily driven by significant divestment gains in the previous year. Adjusted for those, our margin contracted slightly. Free cash flow decreased by 135 million euro in Q2 2017-18 due to, again, lower contribution from real estate gains and slightly higher investments into digital and expansion. Overall, the performance of the majority of the companies in our portfolio showed progress. Our assessment is that the business transformation in those entities remains on track and is encouraging. Nevertheless, we had to adjust our outlook for the current year some 3 weeks ago. Now, let me provide a bit of background on that. The trigger for reviewing and then adjusting our outlook for the current year was a fundamentally updated view on Russia. We have observed a worsened geopolitical development, which most likely will impact macroeconomics. Furthermore, the conclusion of the strategic assessment of the new operating partner was that refocusing on HoReCa and particularly Trader was required, but with a model that remained distinctive and appealing to SEOs. The combination of completing that strategic review, combined with a drag from weak sales and, on the other hand, encouraging results of the buy more, pay less pilots, resulted in the decision to accelerate the Russian change and incur some greater short-term profit and loss pain. Secondly, following an almost two-year period of trying to negotiate a tariff agreement with Verdi, we decided to terminate the temporary tariff agreement, which triggers catch-up with the previously lowered Christmas and vacation allowances starting from the second half of this year onwards. Both topics in combination led to the assessment that we need to adjust the guidance on April 20th. I will provide more background on both of these topics later in the presentation. But a key takeaway from this development certainly was that we need to intensify leadership. As you know, our operating model, a decentralized governance model to combine the need for relentless localization with the benefits and synergies of scale, is founded on the following principles: proximity, control, and action. This operating model works very well in the vast majority of countries. Executive teams of countries are fully empowered to develop and implement tailor-made VCPs for their specific markets, together with their respective operating partner. Our strategy builds on the principle of local value creation, but still taking advantage of scale and synergies of a large international group. Operating partners are representing the shareholder perspective, and as such, their role is to strive for the maximum potential. Upon approval of a VCP, the role of an operating partner is to monitor, challenge, encourage, remind, and in case of underperformance, intervene. For most parts of our portfolio, this works very well. In Russia, it didn't. In January, a new operating partner was nominated for Russia. He uncovered and put into perspective the transformational need for the country. It did not only show need for action in the given situation, but also revealed the need to intensify the principles of our operating model. Based on this, the decision was made to introduce Philippe Palazzi as new COO, succeeding Peter Bone. Philippe has been with Metro for more than 20 years in various operational leadership roles in Eastern and Western Europe. Given his long-standing operational experience and his customer-centric and decisive forward thinking in combination with a strong track record as operating partner responsible for France, Spain, and Portugal, he has all the right preconditions to make a significant contribution to further successfully transform Metro. Besides taking over Peter's responsibility, Philip plans to accelerate HoReCa and trader focus by putting emphasis on pricing strategy, own brand, and generating an overall seamless customer experience across channels. I'm looking very much forward to working even closer together than we have in the past couple of years. So to summarize, we have adjusted our guidance some 3 weeks ago to sales growth at constant currency of at least 0.5%. Like-for-like growth to surpass 0.5%. And reported EBITDA, excluding gains from real estate transactions, at constant currency to grow slightly above previous year. Complete the picture. We also confirm our previously stated expectations on delivery growth, new store openings in general, although a bit later in the year than previously expected, real estate gains, CapEx, and free cash flow conversion. At the same time, we foresee a negative 45 million FX impact for the year in EBITDA terms. Have a slightly better expectation of minus 180 million on net financial result than before, given the resilience of the other financial result against FX volatility. We have to adjust our tax rate expectation upwards to slightly below 45% due to adjusted earnings outlook. Hence, coming to an expected earnings per share growth of roughly 50% against prior year level. Now, let me also add that dividend continuity is of high importance for us. Therefore, it is clear that we would consider to review our payout ratio for this year in order to maintain the absolute level of dividends after year-end closing, if necessary and feasible. Now let's spend some time on Russia. And let me first recap what brought us to the current strategic adjustments to a country with long-standing operational success. As some of you know, following the lackluster financial performance toward the end of 16-17, we installed a new operating partner, Rafael Gasset, in January 18. Rafael went the normal route of taking over a new country and visited the country, visited the stores, talked to people high and low, and analyzed data and business performance left and right. By March this year, he and Jerry Kalmus, the CEO of Russia, started to discuss a more comprehensive strategic review for the route to market in Russia. At the same time, the country organization had realized the disadvantage of intransparent customer individual pricing in a promo-driven market and started a pilot on concept called Buy More, Pay Less, which is essentially a volume-based three-tiered pricing structure. The pilot included testing the concept of a wide range of SKUs in both city stores as well as regional stores, and most significantly, introducing the concept of volume discounts and matching third price tier with wholesale competition. By the time Rafa and Jerry had formed a view on the route to market, they also got a solid view on the success of the pilots, thereby triggering a couple of decisions. A strengthening of local management, next level repositioning towards a focused wholesaler, and an accelerated full country rollout of Buy More, Pay Less. This is a positive example of how the country team, with its customer proximity, and the operating partner management team with oversight and strategic thinking, come to a unified view on repositioning. Let me talk you through the three decisions. The first enabler in any business is people. And with Rafa, an operating partner with more than 25 years of experience in the sector, particularly in Eastern Europe, Jerry, a Russian-speaking CEO with more than 20 years' experience in senior management and CEO roles, as well as Christina, an equally experienced CFO, we have a solid foundation. Of course, each market is different. We don't aim to copy the model to Russia. However, what is possible to have a smoother learning curve, and for that purpose, Rafa plays an important role in the transition. I'm also very pleased to see that in the last quarter, we have added two new members to this already strong team, with a goal of increasing the commercial and operational skill set in the country. Firstly, Martin joins as Chief Customer and Commercial Officer. He was previously CEO of Metro Ukraine, where he significantly contributed to the successful turnaround of strong like-for-like sales growth with stable EBITDA margin during massive economic contraction in the country. Secondly, we have brought in Patrice, a new Chief Operations Officer with more than 10 years of experience in wholesale. With this foundation, we are very well equipped for the changes ahead. The market development in the last few quarters has given us a very clear signal that the country is ready for a more pronounced wholesale positioning, leading us to the ambition of increasing the sales share for trade and HoReCa well above 60% in the next few years. We will achieve this through a combination of accelerating our existing initiatives, like Trader Franchise, adjusting and simplifying our assortment by focusing on core trader and HoReCa needs, adjusting how we operate the store, i.e. through more pallet presentation, and ultimately reviewing our cost structures and pricing processes to reflect these operational changes. One very important pillar is the buy more, pay less concept. Just a quick recap. We are offering single quantity at an entry price which barely matters for our core customers and providing attractive prices and two stock-up quantities to combine volume with price. While we normally offer around 35,000 SKUs in our stores in Russia, based on our pilot data, we will apply this concept to up to a third of the assortment. Now, why are we confident that this will work out? Basically, because we borrow with pride from our own portfolio and experience. We transfer knowledge, we don't reinvent the wheel. The original blueprint for this is coming from Romania and Ukraine, whereby particularly Romania is one of the currently strongest trader countries in the portfolio. Buy more, pay less originated from the need to make the pricing model more relevant for professional customers and subsequently having better prices on the shelf all year long. What we've seen from these countries is that buy more, pay less almost fully replaces promo sales, leads to a sustainably better price perception, and typically develops traction after 4 to 5 months. In both Romania and Ukraine, this change has led to significant sales growth at very limited margin invest. The side benefits are that this model has also shown to maintain attractiveness for SEOs and lift supplier dialogue to the next level. We are not saying that Russia will grow at 20% next quarter, but also the data from Russia shows similar patterns as the one from Romania and Ukraine. Following the first 4 to 5 months, our pilot store showed 3 to 7 points higher sales than their regional benchmarks. We've also made good progress on the rollout, whereby 50% of the categories are already implemented, and we expect to be finished by end of July. While we are fronting some of the invest for the time being, we also have concluded supplier negotiations for more than a third of the affected SKUs. So, to sum it up, we consider ourselves to be in the middle of an important transformation for the country, whereby we build on a solid foundation. We already generate around 50% of our sales with trade and HoReCa in Russia, and we have already started to reposition ourselves in the last years. For example, through our annual customer event, the Metro Expo, where this year we once again achieved a higher number of SME visitors than last year, and even 25% more orders than the year before. Similarly, we have developed and are rolling out a soft franchise system called Fazol, where we have meanwhile more than 600 contracts signed and are increasing the share of wallet by 2 points. Let me also remind you of the magnitude of the opportunity. Yes, the market might be changing. Yes, modern retail penetration does increase, but we are still talking about a 76 billion euro trader in a 15 billion euro HoReCa sector, a market in which we own the majority of our locations, a market in which we have customer relationships that can't be replicated, and a market in which we are determined to prove that this business model can evolve with an USP in the long run. Hence, we are convinced that with a refocused strategy and accelerated transformation towards B2B, we will stabilize the country towards the end of the year. Let me now hand over to Christian for the financials.
Thank you, Olaf, and good morning, everyone. Let us start with the drivers of sales development in Q2. Overall, we have generated 2% of like-for-like growth, with almost 4% at Real and 1.6% at Metro Wholesale. On the wholesale side, the increase against the previous year was driven by positive developments in Germany, Asia, and Eastern Europe. Real benefited to some extent from the earlier Easter, but has nonetheless delivered the fourth quarter in a row with stable or improving like-for-like sales growth. While we grew at 2% on a reported basis at constant currency, reported growth is in euro terms only at minus 0.8% due to currency headwinds in Russia, China, and Turkey. In addition, we continue to see very positive trends for both sales lines in delivery and online. At Metro Wholesale, delivery continued its strong momentum and currently represents 19% of total sales. ProAPro has been consolidated in the middle of Q2 last year, hence FSD sales will be normalized starting from Q3. Excluding ProAPro, delivery still grew at roughly 7% to 16% of sales. Equally, the online business at Real, calculated in gross merchandise value, i.e. including marketplace transactions between third parties, grew by about 100%. Real Online, with growth of about 28%, reaches a 2% sales share. Let's now have a look at the EBITDA development. In Q2, EBITDA, excluding gains from real estate transactions, stood at 153 million euros, down by 24 million euros versus the previous year. This includes a negative currency impact of 16 million euros. The reduction is driven by the ongoing transformation in Russia, as explained by Olaf. The quarter also included some small real estate transactions, half related to excess property disposal and half relating to an additional income from the Chengdu transaction of last year. All in all, EBITDA, excluding gains from real estate transactions and at constant currency, grew by 6% in the first half of the year. Now, let's move on to the regional view. Let me start with Metro Wholesale Germany. In Q2 2017-18, like-for-like sales in Germany rose by 3.1%, a solid improvement driven mostly by the Easter effect. But also, this has been driven by basket growth in recurring HoReCa customers. Year-on-year, the basket and frequency in recurring HoReCa customers continues to increase. As a reminder, I want to point out that on a group level, roughly 20% of our customers are recurring, and those customers make up roughly 75% of wholesale sales. We constantly strive to increase both the absolute number of recurring customers as well as the share of recurring sales. Therefore, seeing traction among recurring customers in Germany is another indication that we are on the right way with the model which we have chosen. Equally, EBITDA margin in Germany improved slightly on the back of higher sales density. In Metro Wholesale Western Europe, like-for-like growth of negative 0.2% was dampened by very unfavorable weather conditions. Overall, reported growth is primarily driven by the acquisition of ProAPro in the middle of Q2. We are looking forward to the summer season, which is very important for our tourism-driven countries. At the same time, EBITDA improved, driven by both one-time gains and the assortment reengineering in France. This has led to solid frequency and invoice growth, primarily driven by this newly listed assortment, especially on the non-food side. When we now move on to Metro Wholesale Russia, let me talk about the like-for-like development, which remained quite negative, similar to the development of the previous quarter. On top of the weak sales, we have also seen a reduction in EBITDA, driven by both negative currency and operational effects. The operational effects and hence the margin reduction can be attributed to the ongoing high promotional share in the market, as well as a small effect from degearing. As Olaf has commented before, we are not satisfied with the development and have therefore initiated countermeasures to drive our wholesale positioning in the market. Moving further to Metro Wholesale Eastern Europe. The region showcased another quarter of significant like-for-like growth of 5.7%, driven mostly by the continued strong trader business in Romania, as well as growth in HoReCa customers in Turkey. Due to negative currency effects, especially in Turkey and the Ukraine, total revenue increased by only 2.6% overall, understating the strong operational dynamics, where in local currency, total sales grew by more than 5%. The EBITDA margin came down by roughly 80 basis points to 2.9%. The reduction in margin was primarily driven by an industry-wide salary indexation. In the Asian region, all countries have experienced positive like-for-like growth, as well as positive development in reported sales at constant currency. China specifically benefited from the shift of Chinese New Year from late January to mid-February. EBITDA margin, excluding real estate, remained on the same level as last year, while total EBITDA was also impacted by negative FX trends. Let's now move on to Real. Real showed strong like-for-like growth in Q2 17-18. Supported by the tailwind from an earlier Easter business, Real has significantly improved the top line. Reported growth is slightly lower than like-for-like, primarily due to store closures. EBITDA reached a total of 36 million euros in Q2 17-18 with a margin of 2.1%. The margin improvement is primarily attributable to the Easter business. In the last quarter, we have dissolved the labor union agreement with Verdi. The results will be seen from H2 onwards, but had no impact on the second quarter. Within the segment others, EBITDA, excluding gains from real estate transactions, improved by roughly 4 million euros, compensating small restructuring costs related to the demerger last year. We now move on further down the P&L. EBIT came in lower than in the previous year, in line with the development on EBITDA level. Again, the largest driver here is the shift of real estate gains, whereby last year included 75 million euro of gains from transactions. Secondly, once corrected for a positive currency-related one-time gain last year, the net financial result of Q2 17-18 was largely on previous year level. The resilience of the other financial result against high currency volatility is a clear result of our proactive steps last year. We continue to maximize our hedge ratio while using primarily natural hedges to minimize cash costs. Thirdly, the tax rate for the first half of the year is slightly above our previous full year expectation of 40%. This is due to the adjusted outlook for the group. Nonetheless, this presents a significant improvement versus the first six months of the last year. Overall, EPS in Q2 17-18 came in below last year. Around 40% of the decline is attributable to the lower real estate gains versus previous year. Moving on to the free cash flow, which was some 135 million euro below the last year. Besides the development on EBITDA, this was driven by CapEx, as the contribution from net working capital remained largely on the same level as last year. CapEx, excluding M&A and finance lease extensions in Q2, was almost 40 million higher than last year. This was primarily driven due to higher number of new store openings and investments into IT infrastructure and digital projects at both Metro Wholesale and others. All in all, our simplified and operational free cash flow therefore came in at negative 709 million euros in the quarter compared to a negative 573 million euros last year. From the full cash flow perspective, the picture looks broadly similar. Operating cash flow came in at a negative 0.7 billion euro this year versus negative 0.8 billion euro last year, mainly driven by the improvement in other operating cash flow, which includes translation effects and non-income taxes. The investing cash flow came down from 0.3 billion euros to negative 0.1 billion euros, driven by a 0.5 billion euros cash in from divestment of short-term monetary investment last year, which were neutral on net debt. The financing cash flow increased from 0.2 to 0.9 billion euros, driven mostly by the repayment of a 500 million euro bond in Q2 last year, as well as a placement of a five-year bond for 500 million euros in Q2 this year. Finally, net debt stood at 4 billion euros at the end of March, which is marginally higher than 1 year ago and is driven by higher cash out for usage of provision. That was a short summary of our key financials. I'll now hand back over to Olaf for some further comments on strategy.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. And again, given the context of our Russian development, one is focusing on this setback, which is painful and one we are working very heavily to restructure and make sure that the progress will be achieved in the coming quarters. Nonetheless, it's also important to see that the transformation into a focused business-to-business, i.e. purely wholesale model, is making progress in various parts of our business. So let's therefore look into a couple of indicators for our key customer groups. In Q2, we once again generated strong HoReCa like-for-like sales of almost 4%. Looking deeper, almost 90% of the countries have shown positive HoReCa sales development this quarter. Trader sales declined by 2.5% on a like-for-like basis, but grew at 3.4% excluding Russia. Food like-for-like sales all across the portfolio are up 2.3%. This further underlines successful implementation of our strategy. The active ownership approach of our department managers plus dedicated and highly engaged country teams empower and motivate our customer-facing employees to drive that change. As of today, almost 89% of our business is dealing with food. Year on year, we have increased the share by more than 130 basis points. Behind this number, you can understand the level of change that had to be done, not only on the SKU level, but also in the store operations and store layout. A good example for this change is Metro Germany, where we achieved another quarter with good like-for-like growth and continue to upgrade our network to reflect the HoReCa focus. Now let's have a look into Germany. Metro Hotel Germany has the clear ambition to become the number one marketplace for gastronomy. Behind this ambition is a multidimensional process. First dimension is starting with building employee engagement through trainings for Salesforce and store employees, which we talked about in Q1 as part of our Gastronomy Live initiative. The second dimension is the concept of the marketplace, which requires assortment reengineering as well as touching up of the areas at the store which bring the most relevance to the customer. We developed these changes to the stores, first of all, through a design thinking approach about a year ago and have since adapted the concept with every new store along the way. The concept, as it stands, is truly an evolution from store to store as we live test the components and build expertise required to further roll it out across selective stores. At the moment, we have remodeled 5 so-called big stores in Germany. The remodeling is aimed to increase HoReCa and food focus. How is it achieved? Well, we keep broadly the same number of SKUs, but significantly increase the HoReCa relevant positions by delisting other categories. We already see visible traction in the remodeled stores, with the HoReCa sales increasing by up to 6%, and aiming to continue a step-by-step rollout whereby Düsseldorf and the region around will be next one to be finished by June this year. Now let's spend a bit of time on Real. Real continues on its path of redefining the format to create sustainable customer relevance through choice and service. With a network of 281 stores, out of which 65 are owned, continued financial improvement through cost-saving initiatives, corporations and intensive work on reaching competitive labor costs, the business has undergone tremendous transformation in the last few years. Real also has the widest assortment on a countrywide level, complemented by a strong online marketplace and catering to a growing demand in the German market. To sum it up, we are convinced that there is a new formula for Real. Firstly, the commercial model of Food Lover, which was piloted in Krefeld, and where we are opening a second store later this year in Braunschweig. We took the learnings from Krefeld-Markthalle and started to roll out parts of it across the store portfolio. In the stores with modular rollout, we see roughly 5% growth in food sales, which is a result of wider consumer assortment, higher number of innovative products, and own brand redesign. Second pivotal factor of Real's commercial future is the online business. Our marketplace has been running currently for a bit over a year, and it has surpassed our own targets by a large degree. We currently have more than 5,000 merchants and around 750,000 buying customers in the second quarter. Gross merchandise value has grown by more than 107%. Total online sales amount now to 2% of total sales at Real. As you can see, we are making significant progress in illustrating growth potential for our stores in our marketplace. To fully achieve a sustainable business platform for the future, we need to significantly improve our cost base, which is a third cornerstone in the formula for Real. In addition to the measures relating to tariff implementation, which I talked about earlier, the second component is competitive buying prices. For this reason, we entered a bit less than a year ago RTG. Besides the synergies from joint purchasing, we also embarked on joint own brand and non-food sourcing, and are currently working on further integration on logistics and procurement. Last but not least, we've meanwhile achieved a path to competitive labor costs for Real. I understand that this might surprise you given the recent termination of the tariff agreement with Verdi. Having learned that we pay up to 30% more than other retailers, we signed a temporary agreement that allows for certain savings while jointly planning to renegotiate the tariff with Verdi in 2016. After 2 years without any progress and actually blocking from the Verdi side, we had to terminate the contract, thereby nullifying the previously given guarantees, but also starting from second half of this year, a catch-up with the previous savings on fringe benefits and salary increases. This catch-up results in a certain increase in tax versus the present state, whereby Christmas and vacation pay will have to be paid in the full amount already this fiscal year, where wages will be increased by roughly 9% in two waves, first one being in spring, followed by second wave in autumn. Of course, we can't leave it at that. Therefore, we have initiated a number of countermeasures. By moving the Real operation business into a different legal entity with an existing tariff agreement, we are able to save roughly 20% on every new hire. With a natural fluctuation of above 5%, we foresee noticeable savings over time. We have also initiated further cost measures in operational business as well as headquarters to counter the negative tariff effect. Putting the three effects together, we arrive to gradual compensation of the negative effects from the termination, with 2017-18 and 18-19 being impacted by roughly 40 million each, 40 million euro, the positive effects balancing the negative effects in 19-20 already, and then generating savings thereafter. Hence, as mentioned before, we took the decision to bite the bullet on Verdi as we now have a solid path to competitive cost for Real, which was the remaining missing part of the commercial model. So, to summarize, let me reiterate that our revised guidance as well as our midterm ambition are confirmed. To help you with bridging the next 2 quarters to full year guidance, let me also add that we see strong development in many countries of the group, particularly in France, Turkey, Romania, and Ukraine. Let's not forget we have the summer seasons, also with the World Championship ahead of us, which is particularly important for the more tourism-driven HoReCa countries, where we are better equipped to capture the potential due to our constantly improved offering. At the same time, we are pushing the strategic change in Russia, including the full route of buy more, pay less. Please note that part of the Q2 margin drop in Russia was related to inefficient promo that will now be replaced with this new concept. Let me also reiterate that dividend continuity has high importance for us. Therefore, it is clear that we would consider to review our payout ratio for this year in order to maintain the absolute level of dividends after year-end closing, again, if necessary and feasible. Furthermore, We have made some important changes to management for the group and for Russia. We have a refocused plan to address the Russian market opportunity with early signs of traction, a strong performance in the rest of the portfolio, and a proven formula for Real. Last but not least, we also want to let you know that we have enhanced our focus on corporate development and portfolio analysis by setting up a new team which combines M&A and strategy. I am optimistic about the future and look forward to convincing all of you, particularly of our B2B concept for Russia. Last but not least, please take note of our upcoming events, roadshows, reporting dates, and conference presences. I will be in London tomorrow and Frankfurt on Thursday, while Christian will be in Paris tomorrow. If you want to see us, just give a ring to Investor Relations.
So much from our side. Now let's start our Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by 1 on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by 2. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by 1 at this time. And the first question is from the line of Kiranjo Greval with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hey, morning. Firstly, could I ask on your previous plans you're using from Romania and Ukraine, I suppose the difference in Russia is there's a lot of supermarket competitor store rollout. What did it look like at the time when you used these plans in Romania and Ukraine? And then secondly, could you give us some color on Russian recovery plans? You've got the new three-tier pricing system. How long has this been rolled out for, and what's your initial take? How well is it performing? Thank you.
Now, let me start with Romania. The structure of the Romanian market in a certain way is similar. The level of independent trade in Romania is significant. You know that in Russia, still more than 35% of total trade are conducted by independent traders. In Romania, actually, it's a bit higher. The model we were running in Romania was kind of a generalistic cash and carry with not a clear profile. 2 years ago, the team started to refocus on trader and initiated this buy more, pay less, which, of course, is the pricing strategy as much as it is important to take care about the way the goods are presented in the stores, which is mostly massification through pallets. It took there a couple of months until we've seen the traction kicking in, and we expect a similar kind of period of time, 4 to 5 months. We started to pilot this concept earlier this fiscal year in Russia, and we see a similar momentum, but it's too early to say, as we have only applied it to a selected number of stores. And now, mid of April, we pushed the button to go full steam ahead to roll it out. And as I mentioned before in my speech, we already see that there is an uplift of a couple of percentages against the trading of the benchmark of stores. So we are optimistic that introducing this alongside the many other things we are doing will give more momentum to the business and actually replace the expensive level of promo which we had in the market, which is, of course, a very unhealthy phenomena for our wholesale business.
Okay, I mean, going back to the question on Romania, Ukraine, I suppose my point was in Russia we're seeing a lot of, not independence, but a lot of big supermarkets rolling out literally thousands of stores. What was the sort of supermarket competition at the time in Romania and Ukraine? Were you also seeing such degree of store rollout from the bigger supermarket chains?
The trend is probably not as intensive, but it's also there. If you look into the competitive level in the Romanian market, there are a couple of Western European players there who have continued to expand and open stores. You might know that we used to run hypermarkets as well there. So this has continued. So the modern retail in Romania will make progress as well. But what is important for us is the sheer size of the independent trade in both countries is very, very big. And even if there will be more modern retail share in the years to come, we feel it is still a very attractive audience for us that we can serve, and we can serve through a better formula like buy more, pay less, and of course, value-added services and offerings, including the franchise model.
Okay, thank you, thank you.
And the next question is from the line of Fabien Caron with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Three questions from my side. The first one for you, Olaf. I'm still struggling. I cannot square the circle regarding the timing of the profit warning. So what happened between the 22nd of March when we all came to Moscow? You were cautious on Russia, but not as cautious if we look at the numbers and the end of the quarters. I'm still a bit struggling to understand really why the profit warning came 4 weeks after the capital market day. So I would appreciate some help of really what happened internally. Why don't we get a more cautious message when we were there? The second, still on Russia, do you believe that 150 basis point margin contraction at the EBITDA level for this year is a level you could reach? And finally, the last one for Christian on numbers. Can you tell us the FX impact on the financial results? And can you as well explain why we saw a 20% increase in depreciation in food retail in the second quarter? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Fabienne. And, of course, this is part of the frustration all of you must have had being there in Russia mid of March. Let me remind everybody, this event was invited well ahead at the time when the strategic assessment of the situation was still ongoing and Rafa, Jerry and the team were still making their mind. What happened between the event mid of March and then the change in the guidance on the 20th of April? Well, certainly our view on the Russian market has become worse because of the macroeconomics, as I mentioned before, have been deteriorating. I think everybody observed that end of March, early April. The other one is seeing that our sales momentum continued to be weak and the drag of sales being painful for us. And on the other hand, seeing that the signs for actually performance improvement through buy more, pay less led to the conclusion that we need to push the button and we need to push the button stronger. So, i.e., therefore, taking the pain of more, let's say, investment, faster implementation, therefore a setback to be expected in the short term, but a rebound in line with what we have guided, like, you know, in 4-5 months after implementation. All of this leads to a different quality of earnings assessed for Russia, which the timing, I fully accept, is very unfortunate, having an event mid of March and then such a release. But the way of looking into this situation has materially changed in those 4 weeks. The other one is we have been advising that our negotiation with the union is a critical one. And maybe it's a good point in time to remind everybody what this is all about. This is about a tariff applied in Germany that essentially there's only one large organization that is bound to it, and that's Real. And that puts us in a very negative disadvantage. On a 1 billion payroll, up to 30% disadvantage, I think everybody understands that's not acceptable. The commitment of the union was to give us a solution by 2018. That didn't happen. And as part of that, we need to see that there will never be a solution unless Verdi changes materially their mind. So stepping out comes with a short-term pain, which is a big pain that we need to swallow this fiscal year. But we encounter that because we know for the long term it is absolutely the right decision. This makes Real sustainably successful in the future. And this is something we need to take care of, no matter what pain it creates on the short term. And it was a significant part of our reassessment for the full year result and therefore for the material change in the guidance. To your second question, on this 150 basis points for Russia, that's something I could say is not wrong. That's in line with what we expect.
Okay.
Fabian, on your questions with respect to the financial results improvement, I think there are the two elements when we go to the page 20 of our deck, interest and investment result. Obviously, you see there our continuous work and also favorable financing market conditions where we are improving our financing costs. We have just in February, as mentioned, launched another bond with 1.125 coupon on it. So that's kind of the normal drive on this one. And on the other financial result, you might remember that in the last year we did have some volatility between Q2 and Q3. Especially in Q3, there was quite a negative effect on the other financial result that was stemming from the ruble perspective. As you have now seen over the last couple of quarters, due to our very intense actions on ensuring that we have very high hedge ratios, mostly from natural hedges on this one, we have been able to reduce volatility there significantly. So as mentioned in my speech, there was a one-time positive effect in the last fiscal year's quarter two, where we have now not that volatility anymore in the other financial result, and we do not expect that to happen to that extent also in the future.
So there was no currency impact on the financial results in Q2?
Well, the other financial result has a certain element of currency impact in any case, but the volatility, as you can see, has been significantly decreased.
Okay. Can you quantify the currency impact? Give us a number in Q2?
Yeah, we get back to you on this
one. Okay,
I think
thank
in general,
you.
The other financial result includes mostly for currency topics. So you have net effects that are in there and the volatility has been decreased, and that's due to very proactive measures on this one. The other point on D&A with respect to retail is there are two elements basically in there. That's one, slightly higher finance leases, which then results in higher depreciation on this one. And also our very regular review from an impairment of asset testing perspective under IFRS that led to certain increases there on the part of a very small number of stores. That is the explanation behind that situation.
Okay, thank you.
And the next question is from the line of James Grisnis with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everybody. I just had two quick questions. The first one is, can you perhaps quantify that promotional dilution in the Russian margins you mentioned, Olaf, and perhaps say what it was in half one and what it was in full year last year for you? And the second one, can you perhaps outline, break up that like-for-like in Russia by customer segments? Thank you.
Well, let me start with a general observation. We have seen promo levels which came close to 50% in the Russian market, and we have seen this phenomena actually accelerating throughout fiscal year 16-17. Essentially, this is, from our point of view, also driven by an effect which has been driven by the trade law. So with the trade law being implemented in January, the market became very nervous. And as everybody was fighting for traffic and sales, promo shares have gone up. I think this is a phenomena that you have heard in other places as well. Just recent FMCG publications, I think, stress the point. So this has come up significantly. To give you the correct number, let me come back. But we have not been on this high level of close to 50% in Russia.
But sorry, Olaf, just on that point specifically, I was interested in the gross margin impact of that step up in promotions.
Well, the decline which we had here is reflected in essence on the earnings quality. We could counterbalance part of that by cost measures and saving some of the expenses level. We have not released a gross margin number for the Russian market in the recent past, so would need to refer that to the underlying margin, which of course has been somehow stabilized with some cost savings which we had. On the sales development, if you look into the different target groups which we had, it's fair to say that the level of sales decline, unfortunately, has been higher on the trader group. so the independent trade, which is one of our most important ones. And our view is that essentially the reason for that is we have diluted our brand profile. Being the B2B company in Russia, having such a strong reach into the B2B community, but then playing high-low on promo is basically toxicating your value proposition, because especially that kind of target group wants to see price consistency and wants to see something that is encouraging volume. Therefore, our conclusion was that the most recent development, which was kind of putting retail formulas into a wholesale business, is the reason why the decline on the trader side has been higher than in the other groups. The other groups are more or less in line with the overall development. And that's why we also encouraged with this new approach, which should reactivate the attention of independent traders, therefore regain visits, and then see recurring visits becoming the driver for stabilization of sales performance and then growth again.
Great, thank you.
Next question is from the line of Bruno Montaigne with Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Three questions for me, please. You say so in Russia you will focus on the traders and HoReCa. Can you just remind us of what the other customer segments are, how big they are, and so how you think they will start trading differently? So just a reminder of what you're deprioritizing. The second one is the £40 million impact in the real you're describing from the new wage structures. That is already included in your last profit guidance. Is that correct? That's not additional to that profit guidance. And my third question is real estate profits. I think previously you talked about the number similar for this year as last year. Is that still the case? And going forward, given that you spend less on CapEx in general in the last few years, what is the right level of real estate profits to expect on an ongoing level, given the portfolio you have today? Thank you.
So on this mix, we can also go to the presentation. It was part of the overall overview of Russia. Today, we have roughly 50% of our business is focused on the core target groups. So 33% is the independent trader, 17% is HoReCa. And that shows that if you can do the math, the share we have in these two very large sectors still has huge room for growth. So on your question, if I understood it correctly, and I just refer to my answer I have given before, part of our reassessment to actually then release a new guidance was the cost impact that has been triggered by the change in the tariff strategy. So therefore, our new guidance as released of the 20th of April includes the cost we need to swallow this year.
Thank you. That was the second question. But on the first one, the 50% of customers are therefore not traders in HoReCa. Can you just profile those remaining 50% in Russia, what kind of customers those are, and how you expect them to change the behavior when you change your pricing policy? I'm just trying to think about the other 50%.
Yeah. We call them SEO, and it's a very diverse community of business holders, so people who run a business. There might be a few who actually retain a card who might not have a business, but the majority is business license driven, as we are applying this model internationally in the same manner. Now, the question I think you are implying is, if we are now focusing more on HoReCa trader, does that have a significant negative impact on these guys?
Yep.
And here our transfer really is the opposite is the case. We've seen this in Romania. We've seen this in the way it has been applied in the Ukraine. Once our profile on the B2B side is strong and consistent, it actually is the reason for people to come and to come more often to our place. So as a benefit of changing the clarity of our go-to-market in Romania, the numbers of SEO visits is growing as well. So I think the takeaway here is we have become a diluted version of a wholesale business, which is the opposite of what we strive for. We want to be a purely denominated wholesale company, and this is what we're going to do in Russia.
On your real estate question, for this year, we have said that we would be roughly on the level of the previous year in terms of real estate gains. That continues to be the case. As you see, the real estate transactions are rather back-ended this year. With respect to your question on CapEx levels, we continue to invest into our stores, and that also does include freehold. Whenever we are opening new stores, obviously that is always the decision that we are taking. And in there are many cases where we continue to open then owned stores in that sense. So therefore, also in the future, we do expect relevant real estate transactions. And just to remind you, the very strong focus for the last 2 years has been on building the real estate development topics, where we have a very good pipeline that continues to grow.
Christian, can I just push a bit on that? Because last year and in previous years, you had around £175 million of profits. However, the full cash generated from real estate proposals was obviously bigger than just the profits. I think it's around €300 million that you generate in cash. Now, if you sell €300 million worth of property every year, if I compare that with your current level of CapEx budget, that seems very high. And so the question is, therefore, would it not be realistic to expect a reduction in the total €300 million of cash to go down to 150, 100, whatever would be the right level?
But just again on this one, we are focusing on the real estate development topic. So it is a combination when the cash comes in of gains as well as pure cash of booking out the book value. And you can continue expecting that we are basically doing lots on real estate development. So I think your triangulation with the CapEx is a starting point, but you need to add the real estate development angles on that, which we continue to expect to be highly attractive.
So it's the right level going forward, the 300 million and the 175 for future years as well.
I think what I stated with respect to real estate development was the point that you should be guided by. We don't talk exactly about the numbers that we will have in the outer years.
Thank you.
And the next question is from the line of Sridhar Mahamkali with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Three short questions for me, please. Firstly, on the new trading strategy in Russia, buy more, pay less, what percent of your sales are represented by these circa 10, 11,000 SKUs, please? And second one is, clearly you've done a pretty deep strategic review of the business. I'm more interested now in your thoughts on what that's told you about sustainable profitability, sustainable operating margins in Russia. Appreciate your point on 150 basis points hit this year relative to last year, but I'm more interested in a 2-3 year view. And the last one, Olaf, I think you, on dividend, you suggested you may revisit the payout ratio to protect it. You still sounded a bit tentative. Just interested in finding out what factors are you looking at to help you make that decision, please, to protect the dividend. Thank you.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, we are roughly addressing one-third of the SKUs right now in the buy more, pay less. It's too early to make an assessment on the percentage of sales it will have. Now, the fact that it is related to the key target group trader, and the trader being 33% of our sales, it roughly is compatible with that. Just to give a bit of a help. The phenomena that we expect to see is, of course, that the visits will increase of this target group and the baskets will increase. Therefore, also the proportion of this range of SKUs should grow and therefore enhance the productivity. By the way, enhancing that productivity comes at lower service cost, as we try, of course, to make sure that these things are already packaged in high volumes so that we can make a better job and an easier job on the replenishment side. So we will come back and give more insights in that as we are now seeing, first of all, the pilots coming into a sustainable implementation, and then throughout the year also the full implementation across the whole country. On the margin ahead, I would say let's be prudent. We have been commenting this a lot, and apparently there have been different developments in the country. So what we see is certainly the Q3 most likely should see a weaker development. That's why we have changed and adjusted our guidance. Do we see signs and do we see chances for some improvement in Q4? Yes, we do. Do we see chances to improve efficiency like I outlined in the chart on the Action Plan 2018? Absolutely. We will do the math on all of this, of course, once we have more traction and we can also deliver proof of concept. We don't want to make announcements here on hypothesis. But our confirmation of our midterm guidance essentially indicates that we are confident that in the overall composition of the portfolio, Russia will come back to better performance and therefore help us as well to be in line with our midterm guidance. On the
Just quickly to follow up, perhaps maybe phrase it differently. Do you think you'd be more comfortable with a mid-single-digit EBIT margin business that's growing a bit faster, or do you think you can actually get back to high single-digit margins in Russia? Just help us frame the picture, if not the exact numbers.
Well, to remind you as well, as we own the properties, as we are the business on our own premises, we probably should not be happy with a one-digit margin there. So I think that the assessment of this, I can only say in precise terms at the end of this fiscal year. But you hear from my voice and you hear from the action plan that we want to have a business that does not fall short of the possibilities in the market. And the market is still very attractive. It still is a market which, once it's rebalanced in regard of disposable income, consumer behavior, it still is big for the sectors we are serving. And I don't want to repeat the numbers I mentioned before. If we are able to add value-added service through the franchise, through delivery, and through other things that we are planning for, we should also be able then to recover profitability margin, which we have lost now in the recent past. But too early to put a number into the market. Please give us the time to come back to you once we have the proof of concept and we can show the implementation instead of just illustrating in a hypothesis. On the dividend, it is for us an important signal that we say dividend continuity is important. Last year we had a 70 cent dividend at an all-in reported earnings per share of 89 cents. So what do we do when we consider these things? Of course, we consider the overall earnings situation at the end of the fiscal year. We will consider the balance of our cash. We will balance the rating situation. Our message to the market is dividend continuity is of a high value for our company.
Thank you.
In the interest of time, we only have time for two more questions. And the next question is from Jürgen Elfers with Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my questions. I have a few. Let's come back to Russia, Olaf. And you said you would not be happy with a mid-single-digit midterm guidance based on the fact that almost 100% of your property is being owned. So if we break down the operations into an OpCo and a PropCo approach, would you believe that the EBIT margin of the OpCo would have to be in the low single digits at least? Can you shed some light on this break into OpCo-PropCo thinking? Then second, on Real, there was this thing that with a profit warning, you stressed the extra 30 to 40 million of costs. Let me just recap two things here. First, on December 2017, you in the annual report, it was read that Real would represent a significant risk in case of the failure of the collective bargaining negotiations. Obviously, it was Metro or Real that terminated the negotiations at the end of March. Therefore, there's two things that come up to mind. How come the risk has not been part of the full year guidance that was presented to the market in December 2017? And how come on April 20th, we were made believe that the 30 to 40 million of extra costs at Real were labeled a worst case scenario, while now today on slide 27, we do understand that the 30 to 40 million will not only be a burden on results for 17-18, but also for 18-19. That's the second question. And if I may, one question for Christian. Christian, you said that with respect to real estate, deals are rather back-end loaded this year. Does that mean that really the bulk of the profits from or the contribution of real estate gains would occur in Q4? And if so, what sort of magnitude would you believe would be a split in Q3 and Q4? That would be helpful as well. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, let me start with a question on Russia. And I unfortunately need to repeat that I will not give a guidance now on the EBIT margin at this point in time. Your logic on splitting up OpCo, PropCo is not completely wrong. I think it is fair to come to such a modeling. Our view, of course, is that we should be able to address the B2B side in a much more efficient way, both more efficient on the go-to-market, i.e. promo reduction, and therefore a balancing out on the operating margin side. And the other one, as I mentioned before, the significant additional initiatives to improve efficiency that should help us to rebuild then the profitability of the ongoing business. So we are not confirming the number. I'm just saying that the way of thinking is not wrong, and therefore it reiterates what I mentioned before and the question that has been raised earlier.
Can I just interrupt for one sec, Olaf, please? On my modeling, I believe the EBIT margin for the OpCo is not far away from like the 2% threshold. So hence, if it takes longer than expected to generate any efficiency gains, the margin could come down further, implying that the money is to be made exclusively on the PropCo model in Russia. Can you share views on the math?
Yeah, on that I disagree. I mean, having seen this high promo share and the invest in margin with low productivity, actually negative productivity, we know that we have created quite some damage. In reducing that investment and replacing that into buy more, pay less, almost an EDLP approach on high quantity, we have seen elsewhere that this, while it comes with some pain on the short term, comes with a recovery of earnings quality after a couple of months. We say between 4 to 5 months. That's what we expect here as well. On the efficiency of the organization, it's clear that there is enough headroom still to be addressed, and Rafa has a long track record in addressing these things. I think our cost of service in Russia is too high. It also comes alongside some of the retail phenomena that we have seen growing in the business. And all of these things together are part of the rebuild of the P&L. So I disagree that we cannot improve earnings quality of operations. I see that potential, and I don't think it's small. On Real. It's a complicated matter, but if you have a contract which is signed by the head of the union, by the head of the sector of retail of the union, which essentially tells you you can trust, we are committed to reform the tariff across the retail sector. Now, you may ask, well, that's a bit naive whether that happens. And I agree. I think nobody had the huge expectation that would happen. But the confirmation is written black and white that elsewise we would get a house tariff, as we call it in Germany, which is one that you apply just for Real. That is written down black and white. Now, I think given the size and the reputation of that union, our expectation was that we negotiate until the very end and only we see that it is really against the spirit and against the writing of the contract, we pull the plug. We have had escalation meetings up to the highest level of the union still in March, still end of March. We have come to conclusion that we need to prepare for ending the contract end of March, but we are still in the mode of saying we are open to negotiate with everybody, which was the case. On the 20th of April, we pulled the plug, which was in fact the moment in time where we triggered the carve-out of the operational business and the move into the new legal entity, which is the one that enjoys already an applicable tariff, which gives us the benefits I refer to. So at that point, it is clear the contract will be terminated. And that's why this, I understand your observation, but it's not matching with the reality of the negotiation and the factual change of legal entities and therefore also contract termination.
So can I just get this confirmed? I understand the risk, the extra cost position has not been part of the full year guidance in December 2017, as everybody was hoping that there could be a positive end of the negotiations.
Absolutely. It was
okay.
Not part of the guidance that we have given in December.
Okay.
On your question with respect to real estate...
Sorry, Christian. Just on the worst-case scenario wording that came across on April 20th. And now it seems as if this has not been a worst case, but a factual aspect.
Well, the point here is, of course, we will address countermeasures. And just to share that with you, part of the... interim tariff agreement which we had was stop of restructuring, and of course the team is now working on things that can help us to improve the P&L impact, but it's too early to say, so therefore we right now encounter the magnitude of impact in the P&L as described.
Okay, thank you.
So on real estate, let me just reiterate that we confirm to expect to be roughly on previous year level in that respect. The statement on this being back-ended is predominantly reflected to stating the facts for Q1 and Q2, where we had just one and another one transaction in each quarter in the last fiscal year, Q1 and Q2, which was in Munich and in Hong Kong, where you remember that this was making up the very, very bulk of the real estate transactions. In this year, it turns out that the transactions are rather back-end loaded, and it's difficult to predict exactly when that's going to happen. However, it's, I think, not wrong to be assuming that there could be also a significant skew towards the Q4 at that end.
All right. Thank you very much, Christian.
The next question is from the line of Frederick Lecavre with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Cedric Lecap from Raymond James. I have two follow-ups, the first one on Russia and the second one on the phasing of this real extra cost, just to be sure. On Russia, could you maybe give us some indication on the volume situation in Q1 and Q2? Maybe make a parallel with what you've seen in Romania from your previous test on volume after a few quarters of implementation, and maybe tell us what kind of volume uplift you would need to meet this 150 basis points target, which was described earlier, to limit the damage this year. And the second question is on this 40 million, 30 to 40 million. Could you just precise the kind of phasing for our modeling of this extra cost on real? Thank you very much.
On volume, it is clear that in the current market circumstances, it's not going to be a surprise. Volumes have been down in the second quarter. A trend has been slightly negative compared to Q1, but not massively. The change in the BMPL, we typically expect that volume growth kicks in, as I mentioned, 4 to 5 months. In practice, we have seen an upswing, middle single-digit percentage in the course of the pilot trials. Of course, and this is referencing to what we have seen in Romania and in Ukraine, we would expect that this number still goes sizably up, so that the volume impact is going to be higher than the one we have seen so far. On your question in regard of the, if I got it correctly, what can we do to mitigate the 30, 40 million in order to protect us from more impact on the profit and loss? Well, first of all, we can now continue to work on the store portfolio. We can continue to work on the structure of the organization. We are able to be, enjoying as of most likely July of this year that new joiners of the company will have competitive wages. And as we have a sizable number of pensioners, so to say, we will see a gradual pickup of that. Also, we have a sizable number of temporary workforce. Phasing of the 40 million, I think that was also part of your question, is roughly two-thirds of that impact will be encountered in the third quarter, and one-third of it will happen in the fourth quarter. Okay. So in that sense, this basically concludes our Q&A session. And therefore, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for having joined our conference call. Should you have any follow-up questions, please reach out to our Investor Relations team. Thank you and have a good day. Bye-bye.